This is Carolina Business Review. Major support provided by Colonial Life, providing benefits to employees to help them protect their families, their finances, and their futures. High Point University, the premier life skills university, focused on preparing students for the world as it is going to be. Sunoco, a global manufacturer of consumer and industrial packaging products and services, with more than 300 operations in 35 countries.
It is hard to remember a time when there was so much consternation about the economy, but also the coming debate and the passion with the presidential politics next year and the very long tail on how the 2020 pandemic continues to manifest. Welcome once again to the most widely watched and the longest running program on Carolina business policy and public affairs, seen every week for more than three decades across both North and South Carolina. At the end of the year and at the beginning of next year is always a good time to assess where we are, where we were, and where we are going. And we do exactly that with a special two-part Carolina Business Review. First part of our economic year in review with our resident panelists right now. And part number two will include a look ahead to what 2024 may possibly bring. And we start one of our favorite dialogues right now.
Major funding also by Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, and Martin Marietta, a leading provider of natural resource-based building materials, providing the foundation on which our communities improve and grow. The Economic Year in Review, featuring Dr. John Connaughton of UNC Charlotte, Dr. Joseph Von Nessen, University of South Carolina, Dr. Frank Hefner from the College of Charleston, and Dr. Jerry Fox of High Point University.
Happy holidays. Welcome to the program. This is, we're not supposed to play favorites, but this is one of my favorite dialogues of the entire year, of the 50 plus shows we do. It's a bit of a mashup, and I wouldn't usually normally use that term with economists, but you all have a different kind of sense about you once we get rolling. Dr. Fox, you're new to this, so you get the first pitch. What was the biggest surprise economically, business, financially for you in 2023?
Well, I was both surprised and I guess in some ways happy that the economy, the GDP growth, especially this third quarter, was about 5%, 5% real GDP. So the economy has been picking up in that way. Inflation has been declining. It seems to be holding steady right now at close to 4%. I guess the Fed wants to reduce it down to 2. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we haven't gone into another recession, some people were predicting that, and I don't think that we are going to go into a recession. I think we're going to have a soft landing. At least I'm hopeful that that's been the case. I guess I'm surprised and happy that the economy has done as well as it has, just generally the macroeconomic aspects.
John, what's your biggest surprise?
I'm going to have to agree with that. Seriously, I mean, I think that there was better than a 50%. No, there's better than a 50% chance that we probably would have seen a recession, particularly given the aggressive increases in federal funds rates that the Fed had undertaken during the year. And you know, it didn't happen. I mean, as was mentioned, you know, 5% in the third quarter was kind of a shock. Kind of caught a lot of folks off guard. We're starting to see a slow, obviously, in the fourth quarter. The Atlanta Fed GDP Now tracker is looking at maybe 1%, 1.1% for the fourth quarter, which is probably more in line with what I think most of us probably would have expected during 23. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be pushing a 3% growth rate for the year. So,
yeah. Okay. Dr. Hefner?
Well, to, you know, repeat the same story, but I would like to remind everyone, the shock was last year. The group here as a panel all agreed unanimously that there would be no recession this year. And that one was a shock that happened last December that we agreed. And two, it turns
out that there was agreement.
Yeah, there was agreement. All four people right there looking at each other.
It had nothing to do with the economy.
It was like, wait a minute. And that to me was a red flag, because if we all agreed, I thought that's probably not going to happen. But it turned out, for whatever reasons, we all agreed last year that this year was going to be a no recession year with solid growth. Whatever went into those thought processes matured, and that was a surprise. The other, no surprise to me, because I've been talking about this for years, but maybe we discovered that the one tool the Fed has doesn't necessarily solve inflation problems. And that's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, all they can do is tweak interest rates, and that doesn't change the price of eggs for some reason.
Yeah.
And I'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Joey?
Yeah, I would just add to that this is part of a multi-year readjustment process. And I've heard it called the Great Readjustment Period, because we're still coming off of $6 trillion in stimulus. We've had an overheated economy, and this is going to be a multi-year process to get back to a more normal economy, a post-COVID economy. And 2023 has been resilient. I agree with that completely. But we're still in that process. It started in 2022. Mm-hmm. It's going to continue into the new year. So we're just moving through part of that process as part of the Great Readjustment.
Yeah, so thanks for the cue up there, Dr. Von Nessen, because the idea was this, and I called it, we were talking before the program around how much of a distortion, and is so, I'm not going to say this very eloquently, but I want to throw it out for any of you. How much of a secular shift is going on? Are we looking at the wrong time frame? Are we looking at the wrong indicators? Are we thinking about this differently now that we've had this, not just the pandemic, but the amazing amount, understatement, the amazing amount of liquidity dumped into the system?
Well, the market, I'll start with that. If we look at what's been stimulated most, it's clearly been in the goods market that started in 2020 and 2021 when everybody was still staying at home. And we saw durable goods spending 15%, 20% above trend for a while. It's coming down now, but it's still elevated 3 to 5%, depending on how you measure it and when. But we saw a major distortion there, and that's why we've seen a pullback in housing markets and in manufacturing, particularly in South Carolina this year, still part of that readjustment. So a major shift there that we're still moving back from.
Jerry?
Well, the Federal Reserve put liquidity into the economy to help us get out of the COVID recession, because we had nearly double digit both inflation and unemployment at that time, and we're sinking into a brief recession. The Fed put money into the economy to get us out of the COVID recession, and that has happened. But then, unfortunately, maybe they put too much in, and so we've had this inflationary problem, and now having to deal with that with the rising interest rates, the Fed rising interest rates up to around 5% now to get this inflation under control. If they can get it down, again, 2% might be a little bit too ambitious of a goal. I hope that the Fed doesn't raise interest rates much, if at all, but they're going to be watching closely on this inflation due to the liquidity that was put in the market.
And I want to hold on just a second, Frank. I want to remind everyone that we're speaking in arrears. In other words, we're looking at what happened in 2023. On our next program, part two, we're going to talk about forward-looking 2024. Go ahead, Frank.
Right. Well, so a couple of things. Old-fashioned theory, Austrian economics, is probably the only people that talk about misallocation of resources based on inflated liquidity in a market. But nobody that I know of has actually figured out how to measure those misallocations. So in the past, when the Federal Reserve had very low interest rates, mortgage rates were rock bottom, housing took off like a rocket. And should housing have taken off like a rocket? And that, of course, precipitated the first crisis in housing earlier in the decade. So, that's a problem. So where is all this going? So we can keep talking about what the Fed has been doing in terms of interest rates, but if you take a strict monetarist view, they have the increase in money supply, too, has been just like this for the last year. They've finally leveled it off. But there's a lot of liquidity sitting in the marketplace right now.
Isn't there? Yeah, but and I don't mean to be just oppositional, but aren't there models for this? Aren't there predictive models to say if you put in A, then B is going to happen?
I'm going to take a different tack on this. What you've been having and what we've been witnessing in 23 and why it's been so strong and stronger than it should be with the ramp up in the federal funds rate that took place over the last 18, 20 months. And that is that we have, on the one hand, the Fed fighting inflation with the only tool that they have available mm-hmm. to them. But on the other hand, we got Congress and the president simply out of freaking control. Mm-hmm. Okay, when you're running $1.5 trillion annual deficits in a 4% unemployment economy, that's inflationary. Mm-hmm. And that's really where this real problem is, and that's why the economy keeps going. You got two things going on in 23 that generated what we saw, as Frank said, last December, but I'm not sure we could articulate why we saw that. Mm-hmm. Number one, you've got Congress and the president spending $1.5 trillion deficits that are fighting the Fed, clearly fighting the Fed. That's mm-hmm. that's aggregate demand that the Fed has no control over. Interest rates don't mm-hmm. matter. Two, all right, we saw this 100 years ago when we had the Spanish flu. And what followed the Spanish flu? The Roaring Twenties. Mm-hmm. What are we in now? Mm-hmm. The Roaring Twenties. Again, only a century later, and it is simply, okay, you held us up for a year. It was tough even for probably 18 months or right. more mm-hmm. for most people. We lost a lot. We're gonna get it done before something happens again and we yeah. can't get it done. And so people are, I mean, when you start looking at credit card late pays and stuff like that right now, it's starting to get a little bit scary in terms of how much consumers are spending and have spent down all of their savings, spent down all of their stimulus checks, et cetera, all of their, yeah. And it's just getting to the point where something's going to happen soon.
Yeah. So okay. we're still doing the Charleston from the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah.
And it has been roaring this past year.
He's yeah. more of a poet than
yeah, he is sorry.
A,
well, but economist. The other thing, for those in the audience who've had economics and have forgotten things, remember you got on the one hand and you got on the other hand. What happens when both hands both predict you're going to get an inflation, which is exactly what you just said?
Okay. One of the big data points mm-hmm. that is and was surprising. Joey, you used this term jobful recession.
Great term, by the way.
Did you come up with that?
I was at the meeting that he presented that and came up with it, and I said, Joey.
I heard that somewhere, but it sticks okay, because I think it's very descriptive.
Guess where you heard that?
Was it from you? Might have been from you.
He's not saying, he's implying it, but let's get back to the point here. Dr. Hefner always does this. Do you still feel like it's a jobful recession? Does recession still count? Are we in a recession? Will we be in a recession? I don't want to forecast for next year, but are we in a recession in some ways?
No, we're not in a recession right now.
Okay.
But the term jobful recession is more to mean that if we were to see a recession, and going back, if we had seen a recession this year, or if we do see one in 2024, it would be have minimal effects on the labor market because we've seen such a labor shortage, because unemployment is at historic lows. In South Carolina, the unemployment rate's down to 2.9%, which is right where it was in February of 2020 before the pandemic started. We have an aging labor force, an aging demographic that's disproportionately affecting the Southeast. So I think that if we did see a recession next year, this is getting into the future, but it would have minimal effects on the labor market simply because of where we are demographically.
Were you surprised by the job strength in jobs?
Well, the job report came out just this morning,
right.
and I was thinking that maybe unemployment would move in the other direction, up to 3.9% nationally. It actually fell to 3.7%, which indicates that we still have a lot of strength, a lot of demand in the economy. As far as the inflation hawks, I think that they were hoping that there might have been an upward tick in unemployment just to help bring down the inflation rate. That presumably there's some inverse mm-hmm. relationship between inflation and unemployment in the short term. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, getting jobs out there, that's fantastic. Okay, that's one goal. But on the other hand, not to get this inflation problem worsening once again. We got to keep that under control, get that a little bit lower, somewhat lower.
Was not a surprise to me, but it turned out it was a surprise to other people, and that was the Silicon Valley Bank fiasco. And who doesn't know that when interest rates go up, asset prices in bonds go down? And so that has to, like, where were these people when they were thinking about this?
Where were the bankers or where were the regulators?
Both.
Well, I think the regulators have, to some degree, already mea culpa publicly and said that the surveillance was missed.
Right.
And it was right in front. And we're not going to throw them under the bus because we don't have a Fed official here to completely defend themselves.
There's actually what Frank brings up about Silicon Valley, there's actually a much bigger problem that nobody is talking about right now. You have the Fed who is trying to get us through a soft landing using interest rates and hopefully get inflation down to that 2% benchmark that they're shooting for. However, the Fed is conflicted in this. Not only do they have the dual mandate, okay, which is always there, but right now the Fed is
state what that is for people that don't know what the
dual mandate is. Required by law that the Fed maintain stable prices and full employment. And so they've got full employment, they don't have stable prices, so they can continue to be a little bit firm on interest rates. However, okay, we're all concerned that maybe the Fed starts loosening because they want to make sure that we maintain full employment, the dual mandate. There's a bigger issue. Fed's losing money right now. The Fed is having to pay interest on reserves on deposit at the Fed by banks. There's about somewhere between $3.5 and $3.7 trillion of reserves that they're having to pay a quarter point over the federal funds rate. Their bond income from the bonds that they bought, which were like the bond returns that Silicon Valley was buying, 1% and 2%, and that's revenue they receive, and the revenue they receive from the function as the Federal Reserve in terms of check clearing and other types of stuff they do for banks doesn't cover that. They're losing money. Billions of dollars. Okay, right now they're upside down a little over $100 billion in terms of they owe the federal government. Normally the Fed is a self-sustaining operation. They don't get any federal funding and they return money to the Treasury. And in recent years they've returned as much as $75 to $100 billion to the Treasury every year. They're drawing down their account. They're in debt. And the longer the rates stay up at 5.25%, all right, the longer, the more debt they go into, the more upside down they are. So they have an incentive.
You think that's a strong incentive for them?
Yeah, I think it's a real. I think it's a real strong incentive. I don't think you want to be the Fed chair where the Fed is now $200, $300, $400 billion upside down and facing the Rand Pauls of the world.
If I may add, it's not only the Fed, but the Treasury itself, the government debt. As the interest rates rise, that worsens the burden of the debt, the budget deficit, and the total government debt. That's going to be higher as interest rates remain high.
Yeah, so we got 2 600-pound gorillas in the room, don't we?
So we've got
So I want to get back to eggs. And the reason I want to get back to eggs is because in 2022, the price of eggs and poultry and turkey were going up. And as I pointed out back then, interest rates didn't affect that. It was caused by bird flu. And that happened again this year. And so here's where we run into an issue where tweaking the Federal Reserve doesn't necessarily, the interest rate, affect prices of durable goods or other factors going on. Housing prices this past year have gone sky high as mortgages have increased also, which is absolutely amazing. You would think that with the increase in mortgages, people would stop buying houses. Well, on the other hand, people stopped selling houses also, and as a result, prices have been increasing. I mean, it's incredible. In the metropolitan area here in Charlotte, your price index is like 600 compared to where it was in 2000. So six times the price. I mean, this is, you know, what's going on here. Naturally, the median price has finally taken a little hit, but that's not necessarily the case in the Carolinas right now, where I can't see where prices are dropping. They tend to be sticky.
Yeah, and we see to add to that, we see in Charleston, we've looked at these numbers recently, just the percentage of sales in the Charleston market. I mean, Charleston's an extreme example because the housing market is so strong. But between 2019 and 2023, the percentage of sales that came from new construction jumped from about 28% to 50%. And the reason for that is existing inventory went down among because existing homeowners weren't looking to sell. And that's a direct result of these interest rate hikes and partially explains why we see these prices that are staying elevated.
And you got lots of people with 3.5% mortgages.
They don't want to leave.
Right. And it also triggers a higher property tax.
Okay, so we're going to run out of time, and I do want to hit a couple of things from 2023. Charleston, Columbia, Charlotte, talking about ports. So the Charleston port, the Charlotte Airport, very important economic development assets for the Carolinas, but it also represents a good way to describe supply chain. Right. Are we back to normal on the supply chain now?
Well, airport, let me tout ours. The Charleston International Airport, another banner year in airport traffic. We have people coming in at a higher rate this year than we did in 2022. So for us as a tourism industry, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, well, what about 2021 to 22? Isn't that a trend, though, in Charleston?
Yes, it just keeps growing.
Yeah.
Now, as the ports, it's kind of a iffy situation in terms of what's been going in and out. But they've had a pretty good year in terms of container traffic, once again this year. So to some extent, that does imply that the supply chain issues are ameliorated. Although when you talk to people, they'll always blame supply chain issues as why they can't get something done.
But, that has become the go-to excuse.
Yeah, right.
It should be
constantly.
A T-shirt. It's a T-shirt somewhere. Jerry, Jerry, do you see supply chain as being fairly normalized now?
Well, I don't know that I would say it's completely alleviated. It's close. As we get into this next year, I'm hopeful that that we'll have that behind us. But it's taken us a little while coming out of the pandemic to get these supply side shocks under control. But there are also some supply side pushes forward with the AI and so forth that's moving moving toward lower costs that eventually I hope would bring about help to bring inflation down.
Yeah, supply chain.
There are no longer any cars sitting on A-lots that don't have chips.
Right.
I mean, that problem has been solved. You can go in right now and you can make a deal on a car. Cars will buy down the interest rate for 5 years. I've seen some ads that 0% for 60 months, which the car dealer, the car company is buying down that. So, the supply chain issue is really kind of been solved for the most part. Sure, there are going to be some things here and there. One thing that's coming up that probably, again, under the radar, Panama Canal is not working.
Right.
It's 20% down in terms of its ability to push traffic through because of drought. Mm-hmm. Fresh water, moving the locks, they can't pump enough water. So what's happening is that fewer ships are being allowed to go through each day. And so that may create some problems, particularly on the East Coast, in terms of supply chain of stuff coming from Asia.
But that effect is also going to be mitigated by the fact that we're coming off this durable goods bubble. So a pullback in demand overall. And so you've got these two forces moving in opposite directions. So it can be hard to tease out when you've got these new problems that are being introduced.
So the last big thing in 2023, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. Next program will be 2024, a look ahead. But right now, Joey, this idea that a couple months ago, WeWork, the big co-working space, announced a bankruptcy. And here at the peak of their market, they were looking to raise $11 billion, and everyone was going to be working from home or a flex space, and this was the new paradigm. And now they went bankrupt. Is it fair to say that is a proxy for what is going on? And John's already shaking his head no, because he knows where I'm going here. But is WeWork's bankruptcy a proxy for what's happening in that flex space?
Well, I would say that it's not a foregone conclusion where we're going to land on work from home. What is that going to look like in the long run? Some form of hybrid opportunities will probably emerge. I think there is a movement we're seeing in some survey data that companies are looking, especially next year, to move employees back to the office more and more. So I think we're going to slowly move back in that direction, not all the way back to where we were before the pandemic, but slowly in that direction. And that has implications. One of the things that businesses have told us is that working from home has contributed to the lack of productivity gains that we've seen and losses since the pandemic began. And we've seen a 40-year low in productivity growth, which is beginning to taper now. We're seeing some improvement, but that's part of the reason. So I don't think we're settled on, we don't know quite where we're going to land on this work from home.
You don't think it's a proxy for that? You got
no,
two minutes.
No, I'm not sure it's a proxy. I agree with Joey. We're not sure where this is going. There'll be some retrenchment, but I think, you've got to separate trends, macro trends, from maybe micro mismanaged companies.
It's the shortest answer you've ever seen.
Right. But whatever you say, traffic is still congested in every metropolitan area in the Carolinas.
But that's the growth of the Carolinas. I mean,
And people are still working at home, though. So there's still a lot of traffic.
But you work at home, for the most part, you can choose when you work from home.
Right.
for a lot of jobs, I think that there will be some work from home. The driving factor is businesses and their profits and their productivity. But I think workers, they got somewhat accustomed to it during the pandemic, and they're going to be favoring that if it can be shown that they can get the job done, that they can keep the productivity, get the reports done, do their various business activities. And I think there will be some. Going forward, there will be some work from home. I think it's here to stay. It's not going to be full time. Maybe half and half. Maybe 1 or 2 days a week for a lot of jobs.
But it's tough for businesses with this trade off because they're in a tight spot because they want to attract the best workers with a labor shortage, but they also want to minimize productivity losses. So where's that sweet spot?
What's the old Chinese proverb? May you live in interesting times.
Right.
I think this past year has been a good year, though.
Well said. That'll be the last word. Dr. Hefner, well wrapped up. And thank you, because Jerry, you were talking about where it's going to go, and we're going to do that on this installment, part two of 2024. It's our economic forecast with the same cast of characters, so you know what you're getting into. Thank you for watching our program. We certainly hope that your holiday season is and has been merry and bright. Until next time, I'm Chris William.
Gratefully acknowledging support by Martin Marietta, Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, Sunoco, High Point University, Colonial Life, and by viewers like you. Thank you. For more information, visit carolinabusinessreview.org.